Good evening, venerable guests and friends. Welcome to BBC Heart Talk with Ajahn Brahm. First of all, may I like to remind all of you to switch your mobile phone to silent mode or switch it off, or you'll get bad karma. We are very honored tonight to have Ajahn Brahm to answer all the inspiring questions collected from all of you. For those who don't know Ajahn Brahm too well, here's a little summary of him. Ajahn Brahm was born in London and graduated from Cambridge University in theoretical physics. He went to Thailand to become a Theravada Buddhist monk when he was 23 years old, and he has now been a Buddhist monk for over 40 years. He is currently the abbot of Bodhiana Monastery in Australia, also with other spiritual directors and other roles. He is a highly sought after world speaker who has been invited to give talks at the United Nations, Google, Facebook, and recently LinkedIn. His winning combination of wit and wisdom makes his books bestseller in many languages. And lastly, his public teachings, like the ones on YouTube, regularly attract thousands of audiences worldwide. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm, may I start with the first question now?
Yes, please. And I chose the title of this talk, Hard Talk, not BBC, not BBC Hard Talk, BBC, because sometimes it's wonderful to be able to spend time, not me talking to you, but you challenging, questioning. And of course, in our tradition of Buddhism, it's a question. Even the hardest question where we get the most wisdom. So there is no possibility of offending me. Just go there and just ask a couple of questions. And if you go on, I don't give a good answer, you come back at me and say, no, that doesn't make any sense.
Hopefully I have the wisdom to do so.
Alright,
here's the first one. We all know that you give blessing to Buddha's wedding. What about the Buddha?
Yes, of course. Because many people who do enter into a relationship of a marriage, sometimes we have the Buddhist idea of impermanence. Sometimes even marriages, relationships have their use by date. So that if a person has tried their very best and is not working out, then of course you know that you bless both people to separate as amicably as possible. And of course that if you do have to separate, see if you can separate without blame. Because a lot of times when things don't go according to the myth and the fantasy of Hollywood, Prince Charming and Cinderella, when they ride off into the sunset, happy ever after, that is a myth, that is a fantasy. So sometimes, you know, you all know marriages, relationships, it does take a lot of hard work. You give it your all, you give it your best, and if it doesn't work out, at least you tried. You don't blame anybody. You've had a wonderful time together. Thank you so much. We've learned so much. To see if we can let go of blaming. It's not his fault. It's not her fault. It is just life. So see if we can, in the Buddhist tradition, at least be peaceful, forgiving, and realize it's anicca. That's all. And just for your information, talking about fairy stories, there is the shortest fairy story. That Prince Charming met Cinderella Prince Charming said, would you marry me? She said no, and they lived happily ever after. That's just a joke from a monk. So what I really you do, not so much bless, but you teach and you understand what happens when relationships don't work out. You give it your all.
That was review of the wedding between Princess Diana and Prince Charles.
Exactly. Look, with Princess Diana, especially when she died, I was on a retreat at that time. And when I came out of retreat, all these people were crazy with grief. And they said, oh, it's so sad. It's so tragic. Princess Diana has died. Did you know her? Were you married to her? Were you a sister or a relationship? No, but it was so sad. We have a culture of grief. And that culture of grief is actually reinforced, by our media. And it's not healthy. And there is many other ways to actually deal with loss. This is a ceramic cup. Can you see the crack in it? It's an old story. This is the Magad Char. Can you see the crack in this cup? You can't see it, but it's there. It's microscopic. It's called impermanence, anicca. Things don't last. It's because I know this will break one day. When it does break, I'm not sad. I expected that. It's part of impermanence. But also, because I know it's not going to last forever, that is why I have to be careful and look after it and care for it. So when we get to real life, to reality, not sort of fantasy and fairy tales, we know that relationships, like a cup, are tough. We know that it's very easy to break. That's why we care. If it was plastic, I wouldn't need to care for this cup at all. I could kick it, throw it against the wall, it wouldn't break. But because it's plastic, because it's breakable, that gives more energy and effort and care and heedfulness into relationships so it lasts as long as possible. And if it does break, we know we've done our very best. So when things break, divorces, deaths, we said we expect that. It's part of our life. And what happens is we prepare ourselves before the divorce even happens.
How do we prepare ourselves before the divorce happens?
Just knowing that it's impermanent, a marriage. Just because you say to one another, yes, I love you, I commit myself to you forever and ever. How many people actually say that? And how many times can they keep their promises? And this is one of the problems. The promise should never be, that I will love you forever and ever. It is that I will commit to trying to be with you for such a long time. But I know it's fragile, as all relationships are. And so, we will work together. One thing with, going off tangent here, but one thing which is very powerful in the wedding blessings, and so powerful that I did a celebrity wedding once for a TV star in Malaysia. And so her wedding was featured in Hello magazine. So with me, the first time I've been in Hello. But the thing which really struck her, and after 7 years of marriage, she wrote me an email recently just saying just how wonderful this piece of advice was. I asked her and her husband, and they decided to keep this every year on the anniversary of their marriage. They promised they would do this, and they kept it up. They do a forgiveness ceremony between one another, in private. And husband, wife, they get a small gift. It could be just flowers or something, or just a token. And they take turns in who does it first. So it's Andrea does it first. And she tells her husband, if there's anything which I have done by body, speech, and mind, or mind, over the last 12 months, which has hurt you, or irritated you, either on purpose or just by mistake, or things which I didn't do, which I should have done. I ask your forgiveness. I'm not a perfect wife, but I'm trying my best. Please forgive me. And he is obliged to forgive. And then it's his turn to say to his wife, his husband, if there's anything which I have done over the past 12 months, on purpose or just unintentionally, which has hurt you, disappointed you. I too, or things I didn't do, which I should have done, I too ask forgiveness of you. I too am imperfect. I make mistakes. But my love for you is so good, great, that I understand mistakes happen. We learn from them. I ask your forgiveness, and she forgives her husband. It's a powerful little marriage ceremony, which you do every year, not just once. And that means that it's very easy to keep that relationship together. It's not that you married Mr. Right. He's not always right. It's not you married the most perfect girl in the world. She's not perfect. But you know, we recognize our mistakes, and we forgive those mistakes. Once a year, we acknowledge them. It's a very beautiful little ceremony of forgiveness, which I learned as a monk in Buddhism. And it's a ceremony which we use in our lay life in marriage. And that puts off the divorce for a long time. How many times do we just remember little faults, the little things which you know, our husband never did or our wife did, which drives us crazy. And we keep on those things. We carry them around with them. And they're like a cancer to our relationship. It grows, 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 grows. Instead of at least once a year, just letting it all go with a ceremony of forgiveness. Then you go out for a nice expensive dinner somewhere. So that's, you know, the forgiveness ceremony.
What about parents? Would you suggest doing this type of forgiveness ceremony to parents? Because the thing is, in reality, it's easy to love someone that's your friends, but it's actually harder to communicate with the people closer to you.
That is very true. People closest to you, they're so close, you get friction, you get heat. If they're far apart, then it's much easier. It's one of the reasons why there's an old Chinese saying to love the tiger, but at a distance. Don't go out tickle, tickle, tickle under the tiger's cheek. But you can still protect and care for that tiger. And I don't know, I think I told a few people that when I was a long time ago, I came, because I spent a lot of time in the jungles in places, I came face to face with a tiger. Big, big, big tiger. Maybe the distance was between you and me here, about that distance. Was that about a meter and a half? Face to face, and yet an amazing thing was, I wasn't scared. It's weird. I was face to face with a tiger bigger than me, and I didn't have any fear at all. Can you believe that? It's true.
What was that in your mind?
No, that wasn't in my mind. It was a real tiger, and I was standing at the time just watching this tiger. I wasn't scared. True.
But the tiger scared.
The tiger wasn't scared either, because the tiger was in the zoo, in the cage. Wasn't scared at all. But anyway, about sort of parents. Of course, you know, the fault is with the parents and with the children. Parents want the very best, you know, for their children. And sometimes their wisdom is not strong enough. They think they're doing the best for the kids, but sometimes they push the kids away, so the kids don't want to visit them anymore. Always telling them what to do and how to do it. That is why, you know, the greatest relationships, I've seen this, you know, in Hong Kong and also Singapore and Thailand and in Australian English culture, is with the children and the grandparents. children and grandparents have this beautiful love towards one another because the grandparents do not want to train their grandchildren. That's a mum and dad's job. For them, their job is to spoil their grandkids. And that's what my grandma did to me. See, this was in England. Every time I wanted to have some chips, fried potatoes, I could go to her flat apartment any time, morning, afternoon, evening, and she'd say, would you like some chips? Oh, yeah, please. And she'd peel a potato, fry up some chips, any time of day or night. And then when my mother found out, she scolded my grandma, said, what do you do feeding him in that food? He'll miss his dinner. And my grandma would say, if he wants chips, he gets chips. And that's the end of the matter. And I love my grandma for that. And because she wasn't trying to train me, she was just loving me. That's interesting. Why can't parents do that for their kids? You know, when, especially now when they get to be 20, 25, 30 years of age, and stop trying to change your kids. I mean, they're not going to change now. So your job is just to love them and care for them. And then you change the whole relationship. And then the grandchildren, the children, don't go to see for filial piety. They go there for some chips or for some noodles or dumplings, whatever. You know, your parents cook the best food of, you just go there for that. In other words, you go there for love, not for training.
In the Hong Kong society, it's actually quite common to have the parents, auntie, uncle, like 10 adults versus one child. What's your view on that? Spoiling the child?
Well, versus, it shouldn't be never versus, it should be just with the child, looking after them, enjoying their company. Wonderful. The more people cooking you their favourite food, the better.
But how do you see the growth of the maturity of the child in the future?
The maturity of the child is just learning about love, trust. Because, you know, you can't force goodness and respect on a child. You try and force it and they run away. You're kind to them. You teach them this beautiful Dhamma of respect because you respect them. You're kind. And that's what I learn, that kindness. Just what even my, when I, because it's part of our rules, my father was already passed away. When I had to ask my mother for permission to ordain as a monk. It's part of our monastic rules. And so when I asked my mother, can I become a monk? And she said, of course. But my only regret was you can't become a monk next door so I can see you. When you become a monk so far away, so that's what I don't like. It was the same as if I got, say, married to a Hong Kong girl and I moved to Hong Kong. That was to her the same as becoming a monk and going to Thailand. You're just leaving and being separated from your mum. And it was part of our rules that we're not supposed to be hugged even by your mother. But that was so tough on my mum, not hugging her son. So you know what I did? So every time I visited her, I said, well, one hug when I arrive, one hug when I leave. And because now I get much scolding from Thai people if I get hugged in public and they see it, I always, with an ether or whatever, as soon as I arrive, I look around, okay, no Thai people here. So that's with the parents and their children.
Someone actually asked, how to deal with evil-minded, money-oriented parents?
There's no